Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
This is a big week in the debate over women in combat. The military services face a Wednesday deadline to submit to Defense Secretary Ash Carter recommendations and supporting evidence about combat positions or units that should open and those that should remain closed to women. The Pentagon set a goal of opening every job and unit by January 2016, and we just saw the historic graduation of the first two women from the Army Ranger School this summer. But on Friday, People magazine reported that before that grueling school session, an Army general told shocked subordinates that one woman would get through, and as a result, female candidates were given special treatment denied to men. And recently, General Joseph Dunford, the Marine commander and new chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, went on record recommending that women be excluded from certain frontline combat jobs. Lauren Augustine is an Army veteran, a sergeant who served in reconnaissance and surveillance in Iraq. She's now legislative associate with the veterans group Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. She is in Washington. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you for having me today, Robin.
And let's just start with your opinion. Where do you stand on women in combat?
So in my honest opinion, I think we are seeing a session of history repeating itself. After every major conflict the U.S. has been involved in, there's been a new and opening landscape for women to serve this country. And that's exactly what's happening now. You know, after Desert Storm, combat pilot positions were opened up and that had some backlash. And now this war, women have been serving in combat following the conclusion of the war in Iraq. And as we continue to fight in Afghanistan, women are serving a critical role in combat. And this new policy is reflecting those roles.
Okay, so you back the theory that we've been hearing a lot about, that there are no more front lines, that women in the military means women in combat. I want to ask you more about that. But first, about the People magazine article. They quoted sources saying that women in the Ranger School got special training to be in that school, redos if they failed aspects of the course, sneak peeks at the courses. And the instructors said they felt under pressure to comply with what that general said, that at least one woman would pass. Your thoughts?
So my thoughts on that are that we've seen conflicting news reports on that. Someone will come out and say that there was special treatment. Somebody else will come out and say, I was an instructor there. There was no special treatment. So honestly, at this point, I'm not sure which news article is accurate and who's reporting the truth. So what I think we need to look at is those two women accomplished something great. They did have to go through grueling physical and mental challenges to be able to put on that Ranger tab. And when you look at the notion of redos or any sort of prep courses, all Rangers have that ability. And that has been reported several times that, yes, they did redo, but so did their male counterparts on some degree.
Well, and the major who oversees the school says the 5-mile run is still a 5-mile run. The 12-mile march is still 12 miles. So standards remain the same.
But exactly.
What about General Dunford's recommendation that women be excluded from some combat positions? Now, he came to this after a Marine Corps study that indicated that women performed worse than men in combat training, and mixed gender units don't perform as well as male units.
So I think that's another thing that needs to be looked at closely when we're examining the results of that. There's been a lot of speculation about the validity of that study. It wasn't intended to look at whether or not women should be in combat roles. It was intended to look at how to integrate women. And then if you also look at the results of the study, there were instances where integrated units performed better on things such as complex thinking skills. So if we're looking at what's better in combat, physical ability is certainly a critical aspect of it, but so is complex thinking. So we need to look at that study, the validity of it, and then the outcomes of it need to be thoroughly studied before any judgment is passed on the results.
But what about the idea that there are layers of combat? As we said, you're a veteran and you've seen how the front lines have disappeared. Women driving trucks and supply lines can then suddenly be in combat. But isn't there a difference between that idea that the front lines have disappeared and more women should be trained to ultimately be in combat, and being part of, say, a SEAL team that is going to go and take out Osama bin Laden?
I think that regardless of the combat situation any person is put into, if they have showcased that they can meet the demands of the job and fulfill the training to do the job well, regardless of gender, they should be authorized to do that job.
Look, you have pointed out that there may be other research that comes to a different conclusion than the quotes in People magazine or the conclusion of General Dunford based on that Marine report. But what about perception? Isn't perception important? If there are men in the military who perceive, who hear that women might have gotten special treatment, who think that their lives are going to be endangered because there's women in combat. I'm playing devil's advocate here. Isn't it worth waiting a little bit in order to educate them? I'm thinking of the film G.I. Jane. Now, it's just a movie. But wouldn't it be even safer for the women if there is more education? Because there are obviously perceptions.
I think that what you're speaking to in terms of the cultural barriers that need to be overcome, I would argue, are greater than any sort of physical or mental barrier a woman might experience when integrated into a combat role. I was reading an article this morning, actually, where Colonel McSally, one of the first female combat pilots to serve, was quoted saying that when she was the first female in a briefing room of all men, it was nothing but a cultural issue to get over, and the best way she got over it was to throw herself in there and prove that she was a qualified and helpful pilot in terms of combat missions. And I think that's going to be the same thing. We can't speak to the need for a cultural change without making the change.
And by the way, when I make a reference to the film G.I. Jane, it was the safety of the woman ultimately that was in jeopardy because of a man who did not want her in the unit. Well, your group, IAVA, is holding a seminar today in Washington. It's called Veterans, the New Battleground. Women in combat is a topic you'll be talking about, but that's for women and men currently in the military. What's the biggest concern for veterans in 2015 in your point of view?
I would say that from my point of view, mental health care and the accessibility of health care and mental health care remains a top issue for veterans in 2015. It's IAVA's top policy priority to combat suicide among troops and veterans and to make sure that accessible and quality care is there when veterans need it. And that continues to be the major issue, and I think it'll continue to be until policies and procedures are set in place and enacted to respond to that need.
You talked about how women in the military are more than just muscle, that there's other things that women can bring to the table. Do you think that there's something that women can perhaps change if they are in the military serving in combat that has to do with these issues that veterans are facing at home?
I think that women bring diversity to the military, and it has been proven that diversity produces quality results and unique, complex thinking that is good at problem solving. And right now, our veterans and the VA is facing a problem, and we need smart solutions from a diverse group of people to fix those problems. And women are a critical aspect of that complex thinking.
And by the way, I didn't ask you. You were involved in reconnaissance. Were you in combat?
So I was on boots on ground in Iraq as an unmanned aerial vehicle operator. But since I was flying UAVs from a base in Iraq, I did not perform in traditional combat missions in terms of going out to villages and providing security to villages. I provided security from the air.
And what would you say directly to the really concerned, your male counterpart who's really genuinely worried, who feels that a woman's place is in the unmanned aerial flying back at the base, not out with boots on the ground? What would you say to them?
I would say that not every man is meant for the infantry, just like not every woman is going to be meant for the infantry. All that this policy is asking is that it be allowed the opportunity for women to showcase that they can be a vital and helpful aspect of the combat field. They've been concerns every time a new aspect of the military has been opened up to women or any other group. And every single time, they've proven that they are helpful and that it is a positive influence and a factor that makes our military even stronger. And I think that 20 years from now, we'll look back on this momentous occasion and say we can't imagine a military without women integrated into the combat force.
Lauren Augustine, again, Army veteran, former sergeant, now legislative associate with Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Lauren, thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.